This week on RSBNB Update, Succession concludes the legacy of Zamorak season with controlled songs and chaotic violence. We discuss accessible combat and puzzles and the question of doomsday devices in RuneScape. The Winter Trials Yak Track is here, and we dish out some Yak Coins. This is RSBNB Update, episode 912, recorded Thursday, December 8th, 2022. Succession Songs and Violence. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. We're well into December now, wrapping up the year. We got the end of the year shows are finally starting to take shape. We got a couple of fun ones on the tee for you. We're not going to spoil anything just yet, but this week on the podcast, in addition to myself, Tanis, you're here.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week for Quest Week is Taxi. Welcome, welcome. Hello. You're typically known as the math combat person, but you're also a member of Clan Quest.
Kinda. And it's, casually for the last 11, 12 years or so. We're getting up there.
Yeah, that's longer than me. And, you know, I feel like it's necessary to say that the whole reason you got into PVM and combat was because you needed to start doing some of that for your Master Quest. Back in the day.
Killing Nex in God Wars 1 was what first got me into, like, actually pulling together my stuff to be able to, like, learn bossing back in whenever it was. I mean, learning how to do a Raxor so I could kill it for, I think there was a title that was on Master Quest Cape or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Or maybe that was comp, but whatever it was for Morvern's Challenge.
Nice.
And yeah, a bunch of that.
All right. And of course, the reason we're talking about that is Succession is here this week, the finale of the Legacy of Zamorak storyline. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the arrival of the Winter Trials. Yak Track, does that rhyme? Arrival and trial? No, that doesn't rhyme. Forget that.
Right.
And we also got some gobbledygook coming out of a cryptic post from the wilderness detailing one of the first updates of 2023. But if you want to join us in-game, we're at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. You can also, of course, subscribe on the YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. We also have our Discord, rsbnb.com/Discord. But, of course, the most of us are in the Friends Chat Bits Bytes, and that's where we spend our time. When we're on RS, most of us, and we're just going to dive straight into Succession this week and talk about this quest, because they did it. They did it. They actually did it. They started a storyline in August, and were done in December.
Yay.
Kind of.
Did it start in August?
Well, it kind of started with Elite Dungeon 4 and the Aftermath mini-quest associated with that.
That's kind of what I would, yeah. Because,
yeah,
see, so I felt like I didn't have enough time to, like, breathe after Extinction before started.
A little bit. Some of the threads of this started in January with the Eye of Het, right? Adrastea
right.
showed up, and we realized that Zamorak might not be a great character, right? If this is the Age of Chaos, it's the Zamorak season, more or less. Zamorak had his big reveal as Problem Child, and not just one of the four gods who is present in the world and actually cares about it, kind of, right now. That was his big turning point, and we followed through from there, and this seems to be the end of the... We had the fallout from what happened with that starting in August, and then that fallout has quieted down now, but I don't know. It's been around. It was a year storyline. They definitely put a close to the Age of Zamorak that we did not see coming this time last year.
No. Nobody really imagined that Zamorak would be the one throwing the final wrench into it that would set things off for Extinction and whatnot. Of course, all the Zerosian fanboys would have preferred the Erebus storyline to be the next quest. I wouldn't have complained about that, being in that camp myself. But Daughter of Chaos was a requirement for this quest, as is having an Infernal Puzzle Box Tier 5 and 60 Mining and Smithing. And so what that means, and what's really interesting to me about this whole thing, is that you start Daughter of Chaos, that was 40 Archaeology and 40 Divination required. Civil War One, kill 144 demons in the wilderness. Civil War Two, complete four wilderness flash events. Civil War Three, get the first plant power upgrade at the Garden of Charid. And then here we have Succession. Have your puzzle box upgraded to tier 5 and have 60 mining and smithing into it, and you're able to see this entire arc from Daughter of Chaos to Succession completed in that. And that was just something that stuck out for me on this. And with that, I think we want to talk a bit about where we were and what we were thinking coming into this quest. And I feel like that's my whole sentiment of it, is that, wow, level 40 to 60 skills needed for this, and that's a storyline. That's a season in RS. And, you know, the questers and the lorehounds probably would have rather had something bigger, but you got to keep in mind, we've had our palate in such a place for the past 9 years where we've been dealing with those big threats that you had to ramp down at some point, and this was how they did it here. Any other further initial thoughts?
I mean, go for it.
I was going to say, it was actually bigger than I had anticipated.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was going to be bigger than we got, so I was smaller than anticipated, in my view. I didn't anticipate it ending this quick. Interesting.
I mean, it was two big headliner quests, right?
Yeah.
And then some mini quests and some other lore that filled in a number of lore pages and a story that they've started a while ago. I think I'm kind of in agreement with you in that it did feel, two quests isn't very long, and the tail end of this one, they definitely rushed a conclusion out of it. They rushed to a climax in it, it felt like. I think if they'd put a little more into this or spread it out somewhat, and I'm not sure where the content would have come from for all of that, to be honest, but I'm sure I trust their writing. Their writing has been generally good.
That's true.
Right lately. And so I trust them and the time they put in to be able to have come up with and brought it out if they'd wanted to, which makes me kind of think that this was the story they wanted to tell and the time they wanted to tell it. And they were trying to wrap it up this year. And like they say kind of in the patch notes, is that this is a season, like we were saying.
Yep.
And so I'm wondering if, you know, maybe this is something that becomes a little more of a thing. And if they have another season that starts in, you know, January or in the first quarter of next year sometime, you know, if they maybe do a quest a season, if they did four quests instead of two, I think we would have felt much more satisfied with it as a story.
True.
Now, maybe that is foresight unwarranted. However, I don't know. It makes me kind of think that it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
And this also fits the mold of what you see in other MMOs where, you know, they drop an expansion, in this case, the Wilderness rework, and then you bring in story content and PVM content, and in this case, Wilderness Slayer content surrounding it, and that's how you build out the quarter. And Tanis, you said this when the whole Wilderness thing started out, that this felt like an expansion.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I don't know which I prefer at this point, but I want to give this more time. I think it was really cool and very different for us to get through a storyline this quick. It's not something that's usually done in this game, and I think it could be very beneficial. Like two quests and some mini quests in between, that to me that feels good.
And you're saying that as somebody who's not a quester, which is an important distinction to make.
Exactly.
Whereas the two of us are here. We also want to highlight the fact that Succession, aside from the associated Wilderness rework and the graphical updates along the way and the music and the new models for folks like Adrastea and Moya, was essentially a bottle quest this week. And I never saw anybody say that in the community, but when you kind of boil it down to that fact, it kind of feels like that way. And I think it worked really well on that. So,
like an asset level, you mean?
Yeah, because all the assets would have been in game prior to this quest coming out this week. That's what that
was. None of the assets that were used were specific to the quest. The only thing that I think was fully, truly specific and new was maybe, you know, they reworked a lot of like the ritual marker and that they reworked the model for Adrastea, but otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the true definition of the bottle quest, but I think a lot of people, myself included, think of them as being much smaller than this
okay.
quest.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I mean, point remains. It meets what, you know, they didn't have to create a bunch of new environments and places for it. But they told a very good story. We were talking about, we hadn't even realized that it was a bottle quest until, you know, like a day or two after completing it, we're looking back. We're like, hold on. Wait a second.
This fits the technical definition of a bottle quest.
Yeah, this is a bottle quest.
Yeah.
Almost all of the assets were used. So,
do you want to give us a brief recap of where we were story-wise before and where what brought us up to Succession?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Can do that. So, I mean, we left off after Daughter of Chaos, right? And we'd just seen Moya becoming kind of coming into her own in terms of power and kind of going away a little bit and vanishing to some degree. We'd seen Adrasea like getting ready to take over the human kingdoms and trying to get a sense of things going on before then as everything was settling down. The wilderness is in theory an open rebellion and having all of the, or not rebellion, but civil war. And that's been going on. And we come into this quest with, you know, Zamorak defeated and the gods gone and a huge power vacuum in RuneScape and everyone trying to kind of maintain, if not their god's kind of dominion, but very much their god's beliefs and place of vision in terms of being controlled and careful and lawful and those things versus being more chaotic and struggling for power and any of that kind of stuff that's going on in the wilderness.
It's about how to get back to that existence from before the gods arrived and figuring out who the now new power brokers are going to be throughout all this. And that's what we did, I think, is the best way of summing up Daughter of Chaos and the Civil War mini quests on that through the various mechanics of looking through eyes like Trindine's eyes and whatnot with that. So at the end of the day, we're left in a situation where we need to, in effect, tie this up and at this point see what Adrasea, Moya, and everybody is going to be going up to on that. And that's where we're going to actually start our quest coverage of the quest this week. And just a reminder to everybody as we do here, as we do quest weeks going forward, there will be spoilers for the new quest Succession. So if you have not played it or you don't want to hear spoilers, go play it, come back to the episode, press pause. We'll be here right when you get back. So with that being said, let's go through some of the markers of the early quest here. One of the things that we saw happening with this early on in the quest is that when you start this quest up, Adrasea is going to be following you around. She'll follow you pretty much anywhere into the world. I kept my nose down and did the quest in one play session, so I didn't really take her to many far-flung spots or whatnot, but I've seen pictures of her in the Max Guild and whatnot.
I mean,
Adrasea's big day out.
It could be.
I did the quest blind. I didn't use a guide. I didn't look at if it required any items or anything, so I just showed up in whatever I was wearing. I think it was actually a farming outfit. And I'm coming off of an herb run, and I realized, okay, we're going to need to go to Sentisten, first step of the quest, and I teleport to the Max Guild, and Adrasea is standing behind me in the Max Guild, where I'm clicking, and this was one of those, like, oh, hold on a second, how far can I take this moment? Took a full-on, like, screeching hard stop, and I'm like, alright, can she follow me into instances? And I went and just started a random, like, God Wars 2 instance, and she came into the instance with me, so I took her to a raid. So Adrasea has a Yakamaru kill count. We're all very proud.
And
she just stayed with you the whole time, which is, I think, a bit of a double-edged sword, because it's funny, because you can get pictures of with her literally anywhere. But at the same time, you can't get her to go away. So she just becomes an obstacle that you can't click through.
Oh, God.
It's, like, next to you at all times.
But to be fair, other players can't see her, so you're not inconveniencing
others. Other players
can't
see... No, you're just inconveniencing yourself. But once you start the quest, you can't, like, give up the quest.
No.
There's like, there's definitely sections where you like, you go to the new area with her and then she stops following you. But if you're like getting caught in the middle of one of those, you log in and you're not there. Yeah, she'll still be with you, whatever you're doing. So, you know, just keep that in mind.
I think that's wonderful.
Once you start the quest, you may or may not be able to get rid of her if you want to.
And I think that's wonderful because it's such a quester's thing to always have immersion of saying, hey, we're going to go somewhere and I'm going to follow you there. But, you know, most of the time you just go there and then the character appears there, not that she actually follows you to all these places. So I think that was a really nice touch.
I love it, but also maybe it's a option where they should have been a dialogue option of like, hey, hold here, hold please. I'll come and pick you up wherever our last quest step was, whatever my quest guide says when I'm ready to continue the quest. There was not a dialogue option to do this, so, you know.
Yeah, I should have took her on a farm run, considering that, but...
I'm surprised you didn't at one point or another. No. There have to have been seeds ready in the middle of this 2-hour adventure you went on.
No, there weren't. There weren't. I set it aside and just did the quest all in one sitting. That's typically how I do them, with the exception of a few of them. So this case,
anyway. I mean, me too, but like sometimes this opportunity knocks and, you know.
So we had to go to a number of places in the Menaphos area for this, the Grand Library, the Soul Altar, and the Magister's Arena. On this quest, and this is where we start having to what were they called? Instabilities, I think they called them, or what was the name of the things?
Just
we had to
clues.
Go find?
You were looking
clues.
For,
okay.
For yeah.
And this part was part of the quest that was really well done. It was at this point I messaged you, Tanis, and I'm like, whoa, they in this quest they're actually providing sound cues for all of the all of the things that you need
sound
to find
and visual on. That blue smoke
a lot of what we talked about with Mod Pebble actually came through with this quest. You know, not only that, but with the, you know, the skip fights or puzzles when things were just you couldn't get through them. So I thought it was really good in that regard.
Yeah.
They also had little red dots on the minimap, too.
For any of the hint items, if they were all marked as actual pickup items.
Yeah, and I learned in this quest that you can go to the bottom of the Menaphos Library. I have zero recollection of ever doing that before on my main. So I don't know if I'd ever done that or if I just forgot doing it, but that is one thing I learned with that. And if you rotated your camera around when you were looking for the various clues, the ones that glowed and made noise, you could actually hear it moving from the left to right speaker channels as well. So really, really well done on the visual audio cues for finding these clues, in addition to just making them more visible than they have been in the past. So,
I mean, they just to be the devil's advocate, the other point to that is it does seem a little handholdy. It makes it so that the old puzzle, you're not literally trying to find Sir Seville across two mountain ranges hidden in a random set of sacks in Goblin Village, right? Like, it very much tells you, hey, here, look here. But that's probably better modern gameplay design,
right?
Frankly.
And I mean, a part of it is in the Zamorakian Undercity, and you know how cumbersome that can be, right?
They literally start you off in this section everybody freaking missed.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
They start you off in that darn sewer pipe, so yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And this is also where we get my favorite puzzle of the quest.
Of course it is.
Yeah, you knew I'd love this puzzle, right?
I knew you'd love it, oh yeah.
I Mod Raven was a writer on this quest. He has now departed Jagex. This quest was also done in collaboration with Mod Zura and Mod Stu, so... Of course, as soon as I saw what was happening in this puzzle, I was like, yeah, that's Mod Raven writing. Because what happens in this puzzle is you use the big box and you squish the people to get them out of the way.
You didn't need to squish them all. I'm going to just throw that out
there. Oh, I squished all of them.
I'm fully aware, Shane. He's got a dark streak, everybody.
They were rebellious. They had to crush him.
And it's, to be fair, you're playing, when you do this puzzle, you're playing as General Kazard. We need to mention that as well.
But like,
yeah.
But it's effectively a sliding puzzle over a 5x3 grid, and you need to move the big box into the center of the Zamorakian ritual marker. And I don't know, I just found it easier to squish everybody out of the way. So I had too much fun with that.
Worth mentioning with this, and I think it travels through for all of these, is that none of the puzzles here were, like, there was no light puzzle for this one. There was nothing that was, you need to really, like, think and write stuff down, and like this, like, you can. If you needed to, you absolutely could. But many, like, a 5x3 sliding puzzle, as opposed to most of the sliding puzzles in the game, are a 5x5 with solid dots. This was a 3x3, and several of the boxes were larger than 1x1.
Yeah.
So you only had so many options of things to move at a given time. Same thing with, like, the hints. The glow is on the hints, and a number of the puzzles later where you have two options. You're carrying out two items at a time. Like, this is, you know, simpler puzzles even than old quests like Recruitment Drive in some places. And it was really nice because it was still a great way to break up the dialogue and break up the, like, traveling around the world. They gave you a bunch of these things, and they did fast travel you to a bunch of places. So, like, it did flow pretty well, and it didn't feel overly cumbersome, at least to me at the time.
And one thing we also do have to say with the puzzle here, the sliding puzzle in particular, if you reset the puzzle twice, you will be given an option to skip it.
Same, yeah, with any of these puzzles, same thing with the combat, right? Speaking of which, the combat in this section of the quest, I thought was really well done. It was, they gave you a standardized set of equipment levels, I'm assuming levels, although I did see on Luke that it did say, if you didn't have 81 defense, you wouldn't have
barricade,
like that barricade available to you. Like, so it did, like, I think you would have probably trouble with this fight if you had less than 55 in
right,
melee stats.
And that's the sense that you were saying, Tanis, is that from what you've seen and heard throughout this quest, is that the fighting seemed difficult in this part.
I think this was the hardest fight in the game. That fight against in the quest.
Okay.
I think that Vengeance quest required me to use quite a few of the defensive abilities because it is a sword and shield fight.
Right, and come to think about it, I was effectively running a defense rotation on this between Reflect, Resonance, Debilitate,
right,
and
you know what to do, but if somebody hadn't used those defensive abilities, if they'd really enjoyed Slayer, hadn't dug into that side of the game a whole lot, I think this fight would have been very, very challenging, close to impossible without a heavy defense rotation, because you couldn't use prayer, you couldn't use devotion, which I think is the most commonly used defense.
Yep.
You had to be using reflect and debilitate and barricade
and
maybe, rejuvenation and those. So,
and maybe this is the way forward for quest boss fights. Give us everybody a standardized slate, and then that way, then you know what you're cooking up, and that it's, you know, not going to be a cakewalk for, you know, people who,
it's true,
know how
we've
to
been
abuse
saying
the combat
quest bosses
system
are too easy.
Yeah, but on the other hand, quest bosses at some point in time can be too hard, accessibility wise. Tanis, Final Fight of Extinction, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just,
yeah, we just put,
I mean,
you,
they can make it as hard as they want as long as you can let me skip it eventually.
Which, that's a serious thing. Cool, is it fair to let people skip it, but also,
right?
Yeah, for, this is story. This is not giving you big crazy rewards. This is not like, that's the point of it, isn't to be challenging combat. I do kind of miss being forced to throw myself at, you know, Tokar Hawk or, you know, any of the Nomad 50 times in a row. But I think it's not, again, modern game design wise, making the content more accessible seems like a fair choice. Although, just to push back, it feels a little dirty to me to have the option, but also I did clear it on my first run through. So maybe, right? Like, it's not supposed to be that challenging. Or, I mean, it's not. If for people who are intimately familiar with the combat system, it's not supposed to be all that challenging. And if for people that haven't put that much time into it, or like for whatever reason, it's not accessible to them, still being able to access the content is an awesome thing, right? And I think that that's the core principle of that design. And I don't want to say, oh, we should make everything hard.
Right.
No, that's definitely not the right design decision. So,
yeah.
Well, Ed, I think one of the differences with this is, you take people like myself that are just going to be like hard nose straight out, just like, nope, ain't doing that.
Not for me.
And it at least moves them to a maybe, you know, like it gives options. And when you think about right. a quest, the quest serves a very small amount of people to begin with.
Yeah.
And you really don't want to spend that much time and money and development to serve very few people.
I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be playing through this. It's 110k XP potentially.
Oh.
I mean,
oh,
I something like it's not a small reward. Like it is worth.
Yeah,
the
but
time.
110k XP. God. I mean, if this is like week one fresh start, okay. But in the main game,
yeah, at level 60 and 40, like if your average levels are average level 50, that is doubling your level in something.
You know,
like 100k XP is level 50. So like. That's not nothing. Like I would do this on a lower level account. I think it's going to be done. It is the new storyline. It is self-contained. People have seen the previous quest. I think this is something that, like, RuneScape is an RPG. It is a story-based game. I think a lot of people do play the quests. I mean, the compers all have to, and there's a lot of them in the game, let's be honest at this point.
And we need to see if the next storyline is going to start with a clean break or not, because if it doesn't, then more people are going to need to do this quest.
I think it probably will. I think that's what they seem to be hinting
and,
at. Going
and you know,
towards.
the whole thing about this, and this is the point I have to say about combat, a funny thing on this. First things first, when I was in the Vengeance boss fight, I finished the boss fight by onslaughting the Magister, and I almost killed myself doing that.
I forgot you could onslaught. Wow, that's extra, Shane. I'm proud of you.
But
talk about things people don't have unlocked. Okay.
But the question I have is that, you know, you take these quest designers, Mod Raven, Mod Stu, Mod Zura, and you ask them, with what you learned from Succession, would you design a boss fight differently, say, in the Nomad quests, or in Sliske's Endgame, or in Extinction?
I mean, seems like the answer is yes, or maybe they're just trying it out. Either way, I enjoyed that fight.
Yeah. And, you know I see nothing wrong with letting people skip it, because if it gets more people doing quests, then that's something I'm for 100% of the way there.
Amen.
So
also makes it accessible to the level 3 skillers, because again, reminder, quest opens up movement abilities for skill, specifically for skill purism, because it has no combat level requirements for it or any of its prerequisites. Although you do have to kill 144 demons, but you could do that, I think, in a way that doesn't gain you XP. I don't do this.
lesser demons.
So, lesser demons, there we go, to unlock Dive, which is probably worth it for people. Food for thought of, your level 3 skill purists can't do this combat, probably. Right? Like, again, I don't know how you deal damage without getting combat XP. I know there's ways to do it.
Poison bombs.
But since... Okay, right. So no. You can't, because you can't bring those with you. So...
Right.
Brings
you
a
have
recoil.
To skip it.
You can't.
Yeah, same
that's,
thing.
How, that's how they do it back in the
you
day.
Can't. You can't.
You can't bring anything with you for this. So... Got it. Yeah. So, that's it. It makes it accessible to those people as well, which... Cool. I don't know how many are left, but there's a few.
And overall, what we have here is just the evolution of combat, dare I say it, in the modern quest, from what we saw in Daughter of Chaos to what we have here now in Succession. And if it gets more people playing quests at the end of the day, that's a wonderful thing for this. So after our ventures into Menaphos and after our boss fight with Vengeance and the slidey puzzle in the Zamorakian Undercity where I got to squish people. Fun part of the quest, again, I'll say, before we move on. We move into traditional RuneScape fetch quest territory where we're told that we need to infiltrate the mage training arena in the northern wilderness. And to do that, we're going to need a set of, what was it called? Kraktonite armor, I believe it was. Was that it?
Bractite-like, Kreider, I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the Daemonheim armor-like.
The tier, six, the tier 60. Yeah.
Like Argon-like, I think.
Argon-like, that's it. Yep. Yeah. Argonite, Argon-like.
Hard to say these words here, folks. Hard to say these words.
Hard to remember them, yes.
Yeah, and there's a specific spot in the wilderness set up where you can go mine these on the eastern edge. You can get there easily by teleporting to Daemonheim and then just running through the peninsula, or you could run through the wilderness like I could. And, you know, as per usual with modern wilderness, you have to watch out for wilderness threat indicators to make sure that nothing too terrible spawns. And one thing I did after making the bars was I did go reset my wilderness threat level. I went, mined it, made the bars, and then went to reset wilderness threat. To Edgeville.
Leave the wilderness.
Because if
back,
you don't,
yeah.
you could get a nasty surprise with that. So,
Surprise, Hydrix Dragons.
Yeah, that's what you got, right?
Hydrix Dragons, yeah. I got one that spawned on me. Thankfully, no Ripper Demons or nothing like it. Was just the one dragon, so easy enough. But
yeah, people don't forget that people forget that Ripper Demons can spawn in the wilderness like that. So, fun. you're effectively doing this to make a set of armor for you and your compatriot with that. And what was it that she wanted that she said she never had experience before? She wanted the pickaxe, right? Because she'd never seen one before. So you made
her... She wanted an axe.
Right.
So she requested an axe, and we made her a... And it's an axe.
It's just a pickaxe. And... Once again, this is the game putting the direction on us into a combat style that many people don't use in, you know, endgame Slayer or PVM combat, which is fine for a quest. And that's, of course, running
melee?
Around with the sword and shield. Sword and shield.
Oh, so, I mean, yeah, fair enough.
So it works. You make the armor set.
Tricky of them to make a fight challenging by making it a little bit more obscure.
Yeah, and when you think about it, it really raises the question, are people, you know, going to use those defensives and whatnot who are doing this quest, who are mid-leveled? I don't know. Or are they going to be more comfortable with dual wield, or...
It didn't really directly call out that you were going to need them, especially for the first fight.
Yeah,
I really think if you'd asked me before I'd really gotten into PVM, even like a year or two into my journey in PVM, I would have completely forgotten. Like, oh, I'm on a quest. I don't need to think about combat stuff. I just hit stuff.
Right.
And I totally wouldn't have thought to go to my defensive book because I wouldn't have had any of those in any of my bar or two, whatever I had set up at the time. Like, maybe Resonance, maybe.
Yeah, it really makes me wonder how this quest would have played out on Legacy. That's something else that was in my mind throughout all this. But
maybe on the first start, we'll try that out. Because if you hit that much harder on things, maybe it is easier. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye out for that. But that's an interesting food for thought idea, given our escapades with Legacy this year. But it's at this point we'll mention some of the patch notes and that the wilderness... the northern tip of the wilderness has also been graphically updated again to be more snowy, courtesy of mod Black Witch. And the reason for this is just to kind of separate the regions better and carry on the icy plateau effect and kind of just have it carve a little bit through the northwestern edges of the wilderness. And, I think that makes sense given where you are and the fact that there was already a tip up there that was like that. So...
Yeah,
sometimes
the tip's all you need.
Yeah, I got a tip.
Even more than that.
I got a tip numerous times last year with my archaeology stuff. But that's a different kind of tip.
And, like, I will say, I think they did an excellent job with this. Like, I did notice when I was up there, they left a little more of the ground cover, so it wasn't just a...
It just wasn't pure white.
A kind of a flat texture, right? And... I think that looks really good. That was one of my issues, like especially with the areas around Varrok, where it felt like there was texture there, but it looked kind of flattened compared to when it had more of that kind of questionable looking grass.
Right, and Tanis, you mentioned that as an accessibility thing with contrast and whatnot. It'd be interesting to see how the northern wilderness would go for you if you ever, you know, had a reason to go up there for Slayer or something. Given now that it's all white, that would be an interesting contrast experience for you.
Yeah, I need to invest in those stones you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
I think that's
about the
only
stones that prevent your threat from going up.
Oh, yes. That's good. Good reminder, too, for people that are doing this quest, there is an item. They cost 3K a piece, so they're relatively cheap. And they're called the Obsidian Palm Stone, PALM, that prevents your threat level from rising while you're in the wilderness. One is consumed each time your threat level would rise. And, bring a stack of 10 or 20 of those, you probably are good for most of the quest. Not have to worry about crazy stuff. If you only have zero threat, you won't have anything crazy spawning on you. You shouldn't be dying in the wilderness. There shouldn't be anything hitting you for more than a couple hundred.
Yeah, and factoring that in, given how cheap those are from the flash events now, that expands outward to, just doing other things like herb runs and skilling and slaver in the wilderness as well. That it just makes it takes that one little edge off it. And I know that was one thing
Right.
we talked about back in August that you were concerned about, Tanis. So that's a
well
that's,
yeah
that's a
because
good
I
point.
Still got murdered. I got just
yeah people aren't aware of this. One day in pre-show I told Tanis to go test something at one of the Slayer creatures, and he got murked by a Hydrix dragon or something.
Whoopsies. The Revenant Knight and his cronies showed up, and that was it. Nah.
But with this, we head into what is now the revamped mage training arena. And to get in there, you have to
it looks so pretty.
Take a test with Vengeance talking about what you would do on the battlefield. But in some ways, I guess, what would we call this? Would this be another puzzle, a logic puzzle, I guess? Or
it was definitely a logic puzzle. I mean, that was definitely a critical thinking. What does this person, like, understanding what the other person's thoughts are and, like, going through logic in some kind of way. And if you choose the wrong answers to this, it very clearly Maud Raven's voice.
Yes.
I hear it in my head as I
yep,
do this.
Same.
Talks you through what you did
same.
Wrong. And you can just try it as many times as you like. It's three sets of three options, and you pick the right one each time. They're not necessarily counterintuitive, but it does give you three reasonable like choices that a person could reasonably make and say, hey, these two were wrong because reasons. And I really enjoyed this, the dialogue here. I think it was super well written, very much kind of logic and blunt and all that, but it very fitting for Vengeance as a character. Not all that Zamorakian, to be honest.
No,
not that like
no.
Chaos, do your own thing. Very much a support the war effort, but very much a logic puzzle, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, this is all culminating in what we see as a modern quest. I'm gonna say that again, because they would have done this a different way in the past, and once again, the combat would have been different, and then the subsequent investigation of all the different clues in this arena would have been different here as well. Do you guys think the combat in this part would have been difficult for anybody? Because, these were level 50. These things had 50 life points each. So
yeah,
that was a little bit
50 to 300. I feel like they maybe weren't scaled appropriately. I do wonder how much of my strength level played into it, because strength does give a massive bonus to your damage at base. But I one-shot even the, like, air quotes, the hard mob, the last one that spawned was a one-off. I think this fight was much more straightforward.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that the ritual marker, the Majorat ritual markers have been updated with this quest as well, another Maud Black Witch update.
Mm-hmm. So, and that was our next puzzle, was a ritual marker.
Yeah.
Getting into the catacombs underneath where you pick your cape when you first do the mage training arena.
I thought it was
again,
so wonderful
simple.
to go back there and use that as a backdrop.
Yeah, again, bottle quest, but well done.
Yep.
And really definitely one of those things where, like, it was a logic puzzle. It was, you have items around and you need to figure out, in that very classic RuneScape style, you have items in your inventory, you need to figure out what to do with them in an enclosed space.
I love the image of the one measly fire rune.
Lots of excellent examines in this section and throughout the quest, but really big shout out. I'm imagining that's Mod Stew's hand in those.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, everything.
Now,
I kept sending people DMs of.
I didn't look at any of the examine info here, so I'm going to have to do that on the fresh start of the skill pier when I go through here. But what were some of your favorites?
Oh, there was like a broken hammer that was like, ah, a broken hammer, unfortunately unsuitable for, say, m mashing one measly fire rune into fragments. You'll have to find something else. Like things like that that were very much like, this is on your nose breaking the fourth wall, but it was they're just good fun. And just really like I picked up on a lot of it. There were a lot of examinable things in this quest that were just
And this is what
that
people
just
wanted
entertaining.
back for so many years in
That
quests,
humor,
and I
yeah.
feel like we've accomplished this in Twilight, in Daughter of Chaos, and now in Succession. I feel like that's been accomplished this year, which is good.
Yes. A little bit of a return towards that classic RuneScape humor while still maintaining a serious story. Again, well done storytelling like they've been doing. I
Yeah,
mean,
and you
at
know,
least I think so.
yeah,
But.
and it goes back to the same thing as well. The classic thing of how are we going to, prevent this from happening? We're not going to, strap a bomb to it. We're just going to, sabotage it, in a sense. And once again, that's another classic quest mechanic that goes back years on
I
this.
mean, you go back to the first Zamorak quest ever, Black Knight's Fortress, the first in this series of Falador versus the Wilderness, and you're like, let's drop a magical cabbage in the soup. We have just decided to drop a magical fire rune into the ritual marker.
And
I
then
mean,
boop,
big.
it's gonna go boom.
That's it. That's it. And we'll come back to the idea of that as a boom, as a. I mean, heck, no, I want to do this now.
All
Let's.
right.
The idea of, like, I've heard some pushback this week about, was this a Doomday device? Was a Doomday device necessary? Every quest in our group series has had some kind of a Doomsday device. They've done this, from, like, the cauldron in the Black Knights to, I mean, you think about Dishonor Among Thieves, you think about, like, I mean, that one is the Stone of Justice, maybe that's, titular to some degree. But also, like, the wand that you do with Sir Owen in the remake of Black Knight's Fortress. Like, a lot of these, especially in this quest line, it's like everything with the Temple Knights, it's the Slug Queen that you kill with a pillar. Like, it's a lot of relatively straightforward solutions to potentially world-ending problems. And
And
I'm not
but at
mad
the
about the Doomsday device
right
thing in this.
and are we talking about Doomsday device as in the ritual? Marker, or are we
Yeah.
talking about the fact that we learn that the demon or the Zamorakian demons are siphoning souls and have built this device that can
Well,
suck
the
the souls
device
out
is
of
the
them?
ritual marker. We
Yeah,
set we
and
we
I just want to say that
yeah.
because we haven't said what it did for that. And
Oh, it was a straight up Thanos snap. For anybody who hasn't played
yeah,
the rest,
we
it's
caught
a
that.
spoilers, it's Thanos snap. It's a if the thing works, half of all life in the human kingdoms is sucked away and the power from that is given to Bil'Rak and we're in a very different world.
Right, and then the question that comes up from that is, was something like that necessary, or could you have just gone, with a smaller scale plot? And
No, but I'm not mad about it
no,
being
and
a big deal.
like
Like,
it
I think
fits
it
with
clearly
the
brings immediacy to
it
it.
fits with the Zamorakian sense, and it's too bad Sirion and Questcaping couldn't have been here because Sirion wanted something smaller, and Questcaping said that it was nowhere near as engaging as the Stone of Jazz, in particular
True.
because the Stone of Jazz was built up over years of quests and had the whole process of discovery behind
Now,
it.
if this section of the quest, what they did to set this thing up is they stole pieces of the soul obelisk, they stole a ritual marker to summon the souls, and they stole knowledge from Collodion of how to absorb magic
Which makes sense
into
when you think
into
about it.
yourself. It does. And I think kind of like they bring all these again, and to address the point people are making, like if they'd done each of those in a separate quest and built it up as like, okay, they've got these things, now what are they doing with them? What's the plan here? I think Questcaping has a point that that would have been a way more engaging storyline than just plopping this in the middle of the quest, right? And I think maybe they could have split that out and built that up more and built environments around it, like and unbottled this quest, so to speak, from there. I think that portion of this quest could have deserved extra time and benefited from it.
But at the same time, you could have expanded that out into being its own quest, too.
That's what I'm saying. But with that said, this. I mean, if they were trying to do a contained story within the scope of the year, they still did it. It was a choice they made, so. And the quest was still good. It definitely, I agree, though, it did feel rushed, and it did feel a little like, okay, Doomsday device, let's go. We were just, like, wandering around the library, now we're here.
Yeah,
So, I mean, I don't know.
That's where I got to play Devil's Advocate just a little bit here, because that
Okay.
was one thing that I noticed. It was, I thought this would be a palate cleanser of not everything having to be world-ending consequences.
But you're going to
It
destroy
was,
half the people.
and
Right.
here we were again, which, I mean, as a quest in of itself, fine. I'm not complaining about it, but it was something that I noticed, right? Like, because I thought we were kind of in a different, going in a different direction.
This was no Mod Mark bringing home the bacon. This was no comedy quest. This was, I mean, to your credit, like, this was absolutely a, like, big old, like, there's story. We need to have story here. This was not,
Well, and
lighthearted.
I think you could have done that. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you could have
I think
still
we're
done that.
due
It
for
didn't have
one.
to
I think
be,
you're right.
yeah, it didn't have to be lighthearted, but I think we could have seen, there could have been just as much done in kind of like palace intrigue instead of, massive,
Here's my question, though,
You're right.
machines.
because we have been dealing with like within the course of this year, we've been dealing with elder gods and extinction of and the recreation of the Guthixian edicts. Like that is big stuff to be stepping down from. Would it have felt very sudden if the next true like storyline progressing series of quests was, let's just talk, let's have some inter, like, if it wasn't super high stakes, would it have been as like impactful?
Right,
Would we have said, oh, this felt very underwhelming as a story if it didn't have some kind of gravitas to it with all of these other major players in the world? We have now effectively exiled a ton of the Majarrat as well, remember? Like, a ton of Majarrat are now out of commission or under control of another entity to some degree, and maybe that is bringing them into the next plot point, but
And see, that's the
we're still
that's
de-escalating.
right, and that's what I foresaw as the problem as we headed into, moving away from the Elder Gods, is how do you step down from doing 9 years of this cosmic level stuff and make it
Right.
feel fulfilling, right?
I hope that
Well, and
palace intrigue is coming. I
that's
hope
the
it
other
is.
side of the, I mean, that's the other side of the coin. And I think what makes a difference for me is, once again, expectations. I was expecting that, right?
Right.
Like, I wasn't expecting another world-shattering doomsday device. So that made it different, right? Like, I was expecting a smaller type. You can still do a lot, right?
Yeah.
Like, the world can, you can make the world feel like it's ending, even though it might be these two factions or whatever, without
Yeah,
probably
and
calling a
if
Thanos and killing half of the humans, but just saying.
and if anything, this is a learning point for future quests on this arc, and we'll have to see where they go on this. But at the same time, what it seems like is happening with the RuneScape story is that they're following the typical arc of what you see in many modern movies, where there's always going to be some, threat that's more than, just your typical castle heist or, political story or palace intrigue kind of story like that. As long as we don't make the RuneScape characters and the RuneScape storyline a caricature of itself in doing that, I think we'll be fine, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I
it's
agree.
just like every single quest doesn't have to be a Marvel movie,
Yes,
right? Like,
exactly.
that's the
I mean,
thing.
speaking of Marvel movie, let's talk about what happened after the credits on this one.
Yeah,
Because that's a.
like we go from in the wilderness watching this
We did it.
cutscene
We saved the world. We stopped the Doomsday
with this
Device. Oh.
device ticking off that could potentially destroy half the population, and then we're asked to set a table.
Yeah, but anybody that has had to do that for a wedding knows that that can be very, very dangerous.
That's the true final boss. No, no, there's seating
arrangements. That is the true final boss.
That's, yes, I think wedding is an excellent analysis. I think there's a lot of RuneScape. That probably hit home for a lot of people given the age demographic of what I believe are a lot of RuneScape players right now.
Yeah, totally.
You need to figure out, there's four people, four ambassadors that are going to be sitting at the coronation of Adrastea. And given what they say in the room at the near the end, you need to choose where they sit in relation to Adrastea. And the correct order, I think, was the Asgardian ambassador, the Kandaran ambassador, the Menaphite ambassador, and then the Myssalan ambassador last, with Adrastea in the middle.
Nice classic logic puzzle. X can't sit next to Y. Y doesn't want to sit in the middle. Cool. Interesting. Fine. I mean, definitely a hard left turn from where we came from and where we're going. Very much like, but again, they broke up all of the, like, the massive exposition dump and replaced it with, you know, a puzzle, a mini quest, something. It wasn't just, I'm going to tell you a story like they've had some issues with recently. I think that's well done. I think it needed to be there. I think maybe you could have chosen a different location or something, put it in an actual feast, make a little bottled area. I don't know. It definitely felt a little ungrand to be standing next to Serenity, I think, the Falador Herald up there, and just doing something. I don't know.
Okay, so I wasn't the only one that felt that way then. Fair enough.
No.
Fair enough. But like you said, where we go next, this is something Jagex had really not done before. And we had the cutscene of all cutscenes here. Of course, one thing we heard a lot through the Elder God Wars arc was where are our in-game engine cutscenes, right? Well, they're back here. At the end of this quest, and we're also presented with Adrastea's song that she sings. And, you know, it's a wonderful song. I had to listen to it again after the quest, and I highly recommend everybody do that. We'll include a link in the show notes.
It's nice and cohesive when you listen to it all together.
Yes, and that's why I wanted to do it that way. And I don't know how I want to describe this, in all honesty, this cutscene.
So
scene.
It bounces back and forth, right? You get, there are two perspectives in this cutscene, neither of which are the players. It's, I mean, the player is standing behind Adrastea as she addresses the people of the human kingdoms and sings her song, and she says her speech, you know, accepting her coronation. It's very proper. It's very appropriate. There's nothing ground shattering here. It is very, to use the Ceridoman word, controlled, right? And it is very appropriate. And after she finishes her speech, she starts in a song of her people and her family that she is now inviting everyone to join. Again, very diplomatic, very appropriate. And we get these cutscenes back and forth while she's singing. There's four or five cuts back and forth between the two daughters of Chaos here. It goes back from her to Moya, to her to Moya, to her to Moya, etc. And the things you notice is the Moya parts of the cutscenes very much tell out the story of the true aftermath. Bilrock has been defeated by us and by Moya previously. She really was an instrument in bringing him down, and so were we. And she effectively deposes him, and in true strength through chaos fashion, she proves that she is the mightiest and she deserves to rule the Zamorakian faction to some degree. And we move into this, you know, we move into fight scenes with Moya interspersed with these sections of very controlled song with a silent crowd. And at the last thing, the crowd, like, it's the crowd very controlled and very chaotic, very much kind of a send-off to a very classic RuneScape. World Wakes, where you've got these factions and we're back at World Event 1, where Ceridomen is the good guy we've been following for years, and Zamorak is this dark agent. I'm going to stand at the side of light.
Wonderful juxtaposition between these two.
We are being put back on that side of light. Zamorak is the evil that must be stopped, and has been for the whole year, to be fair. But it's very almost in opposition to what we've had the last 9 years, where Zamorak seems like the reasonable one, where Ceridomen is the oppressor. This very much brings those factions, it doesn't give you a choice, but it brings those factions more closely into balance. I think if I was a new player and I was playing through this at the same time I was playing through some of the world of, Six Age quests, I think I would have some whiplash from that,
yeah,
to be honest.
You would.
But the cutscene between these, I think it's really well done. I think it is the best part of the quest in terms of there is action and exposition, and they are very much showcasing what's going on. The whole piece is exposition, but it is seamless. Well, I mean, very abrupt transitions back and forth between the two, but intentionally so. It feels good.
You also have the final Moya boss fight in here as well,
right? Which is two rounds of Moya versus 10 guards, and then Moya doing double damage versus 20 guards. Lovely, the Moya mechanics that we on the show really appreciated the first time around through Daughter of Chaos are back almost unchanged.
Yeah, not much to say on that.
Still good.
And the thing I think we take away from this is that it shows the parallel succession. This was a note from Questcaping. The parallel succession that's happening of Moya becoming the representatives for the Zamorakians and Adrastea becoming the representatives for the human kingdom side, and the difference between the calm and orderly nature of what's been achieved in the surface world versus what, of course, is the true aftermath, like you said, of the Civil War. And if anything, I think if we were to sum up succession, it comes down to this cutscene, in that this cutscene shows the succession that happens. And I feel like that's the best way of looking at this quest, in all honesty.
Yeah. I mean, as we were saying, we hope that they're going to start a new quest line from an early novice level type quest in the spring. But at the same time, this was the closing of an arc. However, they set up two very powerful players who have unfinished business to some degree.
Yeah.
Moya is still out there leading the forces of chaos in the wilderness, and I don't know that she's going to be content staying there. But maybe we get another quest from perspective, and maybe
they started building this Moya Adrastea foil back in Extinction, and it would be unfair to assume that it would stop now.
Right.
So I guess that is where we're going next. And I thought maybe we might be doing something
girl bosses
vampire.
Let's go. But two very powerful women of color.
That's true. Very that's another blazed. Thing that we have to commend Jagex on in terms of how they're bringing diversity into the cast. And, you know, it's just there. It doesn't become an issue, and it's just done naturally.
It's not called out. It just is what it is.
Naturally and organically, and that's how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody else have anything on the quest here before we move on to rewards? No? Okay.
No.
One quest point, the dive ability, which is presently level 30 agility required after completing the quest. That will be taken down to 5 along with bladed dive, surge, and escape after next week, because they want to keep it available for free-to-play players. So they put it in this week. They moved it to agility. Required 30, but then that locks it out from free-to-play, so that's being changed soon. Stu said that had already passed QA, so that's interesting.
Good.
The Infernal Puzzle Box becomes permanent. Tier 6, you can add it to your tool belt, which, of course, negates adrenaline drain outside of combat when you've done
everywhere,
that.
Although I don't know how that interacts with having regenerate on automatically. I think many people who play the game have turned it off, but if you have regenerate on, I believe that still does drain your
adrenaline outside of combat. That would make sense.
You can activate regenerate by tapping the heart icon next to your health bar, regardless, so you do have access to it, even if it's not on a bar. Yeah. You can keybind that with a separate keybind and all that stuff, but
And, you know, that's when people wanted for a long, long time. Yeah. And I made it through most of Reaper Crew without learning how to Adrenstall.
True.
So there we go.
Did you ever use the Rage Relic?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Okay.
I figure we'll talk about that in patch notes.
We'll get there when we patch notes, yeah.
You also got a combat XP lamp worth 50,000 XP. Useful in a skill above 60, and a 60,000 prismatic XP lamp useful in a skill adder above level 60 as well.
Which we were talking about in pre-show, you know, that's not nothing. If your average levels are 40 and 60 when you do this quest, if you're just getting the levels as a fresh start or a new player to do this quest, 60,000 XP is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's several levels in the 60s, so...
Yeah. Pretty darn
honestly,
good.
Yeah. Good XP lamp, worth the quest. So, good for them.
So I guess then that leads us to wrapping up this quest. And I guess the big question we have around this is, was the quest a success? And was this year's formatting of the quest a step in the right direction in how questing was done and how we did the Zamorakian season, so to speak?
I think so. I mean, if they set out at the start of the year to create an encapsulated quest line over the course, or a storyline over the course of the year, and I think they did it. I think the last entry into this felt a little rushed. I think if they'd put out 4 quests to tell this story, I think it might not have. But I think it went off really well.
We'd be there another year.
A year or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So they did it. You know, I think it is a step in the right direction. I think there is still work to be done. How about that?
Yeah, that makes
sense.
But
I like the direction it looks like it's headed.
Yeah, fair enough. Other questions that came up was, you know, why not have more focus on Moya in this quest? Because we don't see her that much.
No, she vanished. She did something happen to her between Daughter of Chaos and now, and we don't know what that was. I remember... Even before we started Daughter of Chaos, she was gone. So very shortly after we restarted the edict, she vanished through a portal to, I believe, Infernus. So
yeah.
She may have been with Zamorak.
Huh, interesting.
Assuming that's where he banished himself back to when he left with the edicts. So very interesting that there may be more storytelling to be done there, too.
Yeah, and... You know, and this was another thing. It didn't necessarily need to be these characters. It could have been smaller characters on that sense. But I think this goes with, as we said earlier, kind of like the movie sense that Jagex is trying to create with these quests. That's why they chose the foils to work together on this. And, you know, the juxtaposition of chaos versus order and whatnot. But in reality, you could have kept the same storyline and subbed out different characters, different kingdoms,
right.
And as Sirion said, make it a bombing plot of the Falador Castle instead. And you would have still had the same sort of thing. Obviously, it wouldn't have set the same tone and same grandiose tone that you would expect to see in a RuneScape Marvel movie. So.
And it sent us to the wilderness, which clearly they are trying to get people more comfortable being in.
Is a focus. So
I mean, I see. Yeah, I think it was an intentional choice to set it where it was set, but I think he's right. It could have been switched out. I think that's true for almost any quest, though.
Yeah, there was also the strange power at the end when Bilrock died.
Yes, a Majorat died next to Ritual Marker. Gee, I wonder what happens now. Oh, wait, strange power. Good of them to keep that through line. Make sure that they're using their old Easter egg and they're not forgetting about it. So,
all right.
Good.
Ratings out of 5. Tannis?
I'm going to go with a 4 for accessibility and time frame of storyline.
All right. Daxi?
I'm going to go with a 4 as well. I think it could have been done better, but on the whole, for what the quest was, I think it was very well done, and I just had fun playing through it. It felt grand. It felt, you know... ranging and important, and it didn't feel like it dragged, so I think it was well done.
I feel like I have to give it a 5.
Okay.
Nice. Those are rare from Shane.
I know
those
it
are
is.
Rare from Shane.
Because for people who aren't aware, the stamp I use for the 5 is that it ticks all the boxes of what the quest needed to do. It didn't have any issues throughout it, and it also significantly advances RuneScape in a way. How quests are delivered, how mechanics are done. something like that. And
I'd give it a 5 out of 5 for 3 out of those 4 criteria.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just it's how the story was done. For
yes.
Me.
Okay. Fair.
But yeah, agreed.
Fair.
Agreed.
And you know, fair. The reason I felt that, and I feel like I can do that, is that when I started off Daughter of Chaos, you guys will remember this from that week, I was not a fan of where we were going, and I was not pleased about where we would be. And, you know, I wasn't a fan of the dynamics between Moya and Adrastea, and I really just didn't want to quest on that line, right? But I feel like when I sit down to do a quest, there are quests that I will just muddle through. And then there are quests that I will absolutely jump up and down and do. And I thought this was going to be one that I would have had to muddle through. But as the quest kept going, it just kept getting better in that regard on that front. Mm. So you can call me a convert on this quest. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it, but I did. So
excellent.
There we have it. And we're going to do a better late than never Patreon ad right now, because you know you guys are here, and we have to thank you guys because you guys let us do so many wonderful things. So this week I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Enrique V, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Mohan V, Nate the Great, OTR Gamer, Pernasius, Ricky A, RS Nerd Herd, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Stabiv, The Naked Captain, The Dabbin' Goat, Tim, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody. Truly means the world to us. And this weekend, we'll be doing the RSBNB update roundtable. And of course, last week, we had our monthly bit on holiday events in RuneScape. Definitely pertinent for that time of year. Pernasius said that was his favorite episode of RSBNB in any incarnation that he'd been on before. So give that a listen. That's available at patreon.com/RSBNB. That and the entire back catalog available for as little as $1 a month. And in doing so, you're helping us with hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, if you want to give a little bit more, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord, including chat channel access and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, in addition to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, you receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, that's coming quick. Patrons have started to receive their Christmas cards as well, so hopefully you guys enjoy what we put together. If you shared your shipping information with us, always a fun time of year to be sending those out. But we'll be flying this Saturday, so we'll see you guys all at the round table if you're listening to this on Friday. If not, check out the recording of it. That'll be up on the Patreon website at patreon.com/RSBNB. So with that being said, no, we're not done this episode. I almost went into winding up the show. Boy, no. With that being said, we're moving straight along to patch notes this week. Can you believe I wanted to end the show right now? No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
Well, that, I mean, you know, we got a few patch notes.
We do. The plant power configuration now works on the Trollheim herb patch. Previously, it didn't work on that patch, but it worked on all the other ones. That's the configuration determining how many seeds you can plant by default. An issue has been fixed, which caused the Spirit Tree's Grand Exchange teleport to place the player inside Christmas presents. They say your gift, but not like that. I had to just include that one for that tongue-in-cheek remark they had right there. And now here's what we were talking about. Now the fact that the persistent rage relic power is no longer needed to prevent adrenaline from being drained. The persistent rage relic power will now generate when you are outside of combat. And I saw you guys doing some theory crafting in the Discord this week on this. And from what I read, the sense is that you'd use this if you were just in between boss kills and you were going at a more leisurely pace, right?
My personal thing. I am not a person who teleports out to refill adrenaline and rebank or anything every kill for places like God Wars 2. I tend to take those tasks very AFK, to look away at my phone or do something else in the 20 or 30 seconds between boss spawns, and that's enough time for my adrenaline to refill. which leads to a much more consistent rotation between kills, which is probably a good thing at the end of the day for me. So that's a nice little change. I may use the relic for it if I get back into doing more Reapers, those kind of things.
Also, this relic power can fill your adrenaline urn.
Yes, which also, again, very nice. Although, since your adrenaline doesn't drain out of combat anymore, having a full adrenaline urn most likely less important unless you get up to 96 archaeology without doing quests. I'm sure there's somebody out there that this applies to who's also killed 1,000 demons or was here several years ago for the event. I think it's a fairly niche interaction, though.
It is. We already mentioned the change to surge and escape as well, move to being an agility ability. So we'll move on past that.
Love that. I love that. To give the skillers access to
it's worth noting, didn't mention this in the reward section for the quest, but for the new dive ability, it's got the same Moya roll animation. You roll the last couple of squares, and you can chain it with surge, so you can still do the same kind of combination bladed dive surge, except it's now just dive surge. So that works.
Nice.
They also added a new achievement called I've Got a Little List of Mini Quests, which is a meta achievement in the lore category that is on the comp cape that requires all mini quests. And this was not the case previously. And I found this out this week because I'm still missing 3 mini quests, and this is showing up as a comp cape requirement that I need to do.
There were 5 mini quests on Trim and 2 or 3 mini quests, like the Wandering Gaul, that were Easter eggs that were only on Master Quest Cape.
Right.
I believe 40-some mini quests were listed as separate requirements, and obviously the sagas, all as separate requirements under comp.
Yeah.
So this knocks the comp rec list and puts it into a much more organized look, which
it's good.
Think is a good choice. Same with the Master Quest Cape, because that was getting like 240 achievements long.
Yeah.
It's just a big old scrolly bar.
Yeah. The ones I was missing for the record are the Desert Slayer Dungeon mini quest, the Purple Cat mini quest, and the Wandering Gaul mini quest.
Yep.
So you can read into that whatever you'd like about my playstyles. I don't like cats and I don't like Slayer. And I was turned off from doing the Wandering Gaul because of the Tokel cost at one point.
Well, reasonable now.
Yeah, 100% reasonable now.
Since they made that change in August or whatever, just hadn't taken the time to do it.
Yeah.
So now you have an excuse.
and consequently, there were many quests removed from the Trimcom Cape, as this is now part of that, which included the Desert Slayer Dungeon, Sheep Shearer, Tales of Nomad, Tales of the God War, and Witch's Potion. And, you know, I think this is just good cleanup in general, along with what they're doing for the quest list, where they created a Legacy of Zamorak season in the quest series sort, so you'll be able to, you know, say, hey, you want to go play the Legacy of Zamorak season? You just go into your quest list and sort by quest series. I really like this. I really like this a lot.
They moved a couple of things there, too.
Since requiring Extinction, Twilight of the Gods and Aftermath are now moved to the end of the Elder God Wars quest series. And they've also removed the difficulty field from the quest overview screen and quest sort. And quest lists that were sorted by difficulty on login will change to the timeline sort. And you mentioned this, that if you play by timeline, it's mostly by difficulty.
So I did my entire quest list by the timeline order with, you know, maybe a dozen or so exceptions for quality of life quest rewards. Last year, and I'm here to tell you it is pretty much the difficulty order. It is hard. It is just all of the novice quests are in your Pathfinder series, and then the heroic section is all of the beginner quests, and then like it just ramps up difficulty. All of the World Guardian quests are separated out, so regardless of difficulty, those are last on timeline sort. Basically, it says here we're going to give you all the 5th age quests in order of difficulty, and then here's the 6th age quests in some order, but it very much is level bracketed and difficulty bracketed in terms of fights. Like it is, if you follow timeline order, you're still being given difficulty or something very close to it. So I'm not terribly upset about them removing that functionality. I don't, like they say, especially we've all remember doing that master or grandmaster question, like, huh, Well, that was easy. Why is that listed here? Because it was internal metrics based on length and
yeah.
number of encounters.
And you know, length is different for everybody, as Tanis knows.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, as the questers know, I know people who, you know, have no physical limitations who have spent days and days and days enjoying quests. So
yeah,
it's all, you know, yes, I'm a big fan of them moving that and putting the time limit. I think that's fine.
All right. We do have another update this week, and that's the Winter Trials Yak Track.
Yes.
Lots of fun things, including the Ice Cube pet, the Terry mm-hmm. pet, the Elite Fremenic outfit, and not stupidly rare this time, the Frozen Shoulder Cape at tier 50. We were wondering about this when mm-hmm. we saw that there was going to be the Frozen Shoulder Cape, whether it was going to be in a gamble box or Yak Sack, but it turns out that you get it by just completing the Yak Track.
Well, they've replaced the Yak Sacks every five levels with the new Yak Coin currency, which we'll talk about in a second. I'm also a big fan, I'll say while we're in the rewards, of there's some Chakram rewards for thrown weapons for one-handed ranger ones that I think are going to look really cool with a Halloween outfit, like a Slayer cape theme, like black and red, I think, for a lot of these things. Like, and then there's a new override animation for the Quake ability, as well as in the Yak Coin store, a recolored override animation of the same thing. So you get ice and blood ice as the two variants on that, which I think is, again, cool to be able to give you some customization in your abilities where they're giving you that. So, interesting.
You know, these Yak Track cosmetics are always the best in slot. Well, not best in slot, but, you know, just some of the best looking stuff that Jagex puts out, right? So.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I don't use very many of them personally. I think that they've the texturing on them isn't my favorite, and a lot of them are kind of bulky, but
yeah, and you know, I'm with you on that. I'm just saying that overall they're just always really well done, right?
They do look polished.
Yes.
I will give them that.
Yeah. So what are we after from this cosmetic wise? I mean, I'm after the shoulder cape.
Shoulder cape, couple of the weapons. I like the ice cube pet.
Yes,
I think that it finally froze a jelly, and that is entertaining to me.
Looks like it's ready to go into my soft drink on my desk.
Negative. Hard negative. I think there's still stuff living in there.
No, you
don't
sure?
eat the snow, kids. It's bad for you. There's bacteria in there.
That's true. Never eat the snow, even if it's white.
But, I mean, Yeah, I'm excited for a couple of things near the end of this, especially.
Purplish robes, also available, a new bow.
Elite Fremenic armor that's got some nice fur on it.
That looks nice. Could you imagine if you actually had fur textures in-game that you would let this,
they look pretty good. This is, I mean, it's very noticeable, so I'll give them credit for that. Credit where it's due.
Yeah. Also, the models who are modeling this at the Yak Track place actually have nice-looking beards, too. I don't think we have these beards in-game for our characters.
I'll go and look, but if I remember correctly, I think they might be Solomon beards.
Okay, fair enough. I don't spend too much time in there. There's also an ice spider as well.
Yes, which has a blood ice spider variant as well in said coin store.
Nice. So what are you looking forward to? I'll just say I'm looking forward to the ice cube and the shoulder capes.
I'm looking forward to the like red and black weapons. There's in the second half of the track, as well as that override, but also the shoulder cape.
All right. Tanis, are you going for this Yak Track like you did last time, or where are you?
Oh yeah, we're already on task like 21.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm on 16 or 17.
Okay.
This is further than I've gotten in either of the last two Yak Tracks. So, there we go.
Yeah, I'm looking for the Fremenic outfit. I like that.
I will say the skill and kills take much, much longer than actually doing the task option right now. I don't think it was like that the last time I did a full Yak Track.
No, it wasn't.
I'm a big fan of the task portions of it, at least for the start of the track being shorter. I think the balance on it feels good.
So the skill and kill is the same amount of time as the previous Yak Track, and the previous one was a little bit more than the one before that. Then it was a big step up from there. So it seems they've settled into a groove of what they want to do with that.
I mean, it works for me. I don't have to change my game style at all. I just play.
And I mean, the amount you're playing through Fresh Start and Main you're going to just, you know, get skill and kill done at that rate. You know, it's like 3.08 hours a day if you are going to do all the skill and kills over the 56 days the act track is up.
Hmm. I'm just on the fence for what to use my coins on.
I don't know. Icequake is good, and I'll just say that. And with that, I think we can move on to Yak coins now. These, of course, were leaked through when the store was supposed to come out, when the update was supposed to arrive, but it's here now. And, you know, the idea behind this is that you can purchase pretty much any Yak Track reward that has been on any Yak Track except for Yak Track 1, I think they said. So I'm a fan of this, but one thing that we do have to say on this is that the things in here are expensive, and you get one Yak coin for every 5 tasks that you do.
Right. So it's 10 coins for completing the track. However,
there's the extra bonus task at the end, the task 51 that is repeatable, that is a skill and kill of, I'll have to go to the wiki for that, but in any case, it's a skill and kill that just repeats every so often, and that's how, I guess, if you complete the act track early, you're going to grind these Yak coins. And what do you guys think of this as a mechanic? Because I think bringing back the cosmetics is good, but at the same time, as we said, 10 Yak coins throughout this entire thing.
Yeah.
That's not
too many. Skill and kill is 60, so it is 1 coin per 5 hours after the track is done. So, I mean, I think it's 60.
Because, the cape is 16.
So the cape is free at 50, a tradable version of the cape, separate from... So we will get a copy of the cape, untradable, at when we complete task 50, guaranteed. After that, you can spend 16 coins to buy a tradable version of it for those who are too lazy to complete a full, or not able to complete a full Yak Track. So that is the tradable rare portion. It's just, I believe, the same cosmetic.
Yeah, so it's 60 increments of skill and kill, which is 180 minutes of gameplay.
Isn't skill and kill 1 per 5 minutes?
No, it's 3.
Oh, it's 3 hours. Okay, that makes it way more reasonable. My brain.
It's 3.
That one's on me. I've only done 2 skill and kill so far, so that tracks.
Yeah. And, you know, the frozen shoulder cape is actually different than the one that you get from the tier 50 one.
Is it?
Yeah, there's 2 variants of it. And I was wondering what this was, but there's 2... If you go to the Yak vendor in Burthorpe, there's 2 different capes. There's one with the freezing aspect of it, and that's the one that costs 16 Yak coins. But then there's just the shoulder cape that's standard that you get for completing tier 50. That's the one on the right. So the one in there for 16 Yak coins is, or 15 Yak coins is unique.
Are we... Huh. I'm surprised by that. Smithing, stop. I can't be getting XP right now.
And let's be real. The one...
Frosty versus freezing.
Yeah. The frozen one looks better, in my opinion. But... And, you know... When this came out, and the reason
Frosty versus Frozen, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the reason we delayed talking about this is we wanted to see what the prices would be and where everything would land on this. And people can call this a microtransaction store, but this is kind of what you were talking about with the last Yak Track, and that, you know, other games have battle passes that aren't designed to be complete, and in some ways this 16 Yak coins for the extra
requires
or the blood ice is that extra beyond the track that we have.
Now, if the coins carried over between tracks, I'd say fine.
Yes, that's
true.
But
the issue is that you have to complete task 55, essentially, to get the cape, or 54 or whatever, to get the to get the re-override for your Blood Ice. And I don't love that as a mechanic. I mean, it does say that, hey, if you go past 50, there are still rewards to unlock that are unique. But I'm a little disappointed.
Maybe you hold on to that. Maybe you hold on to that. That might be something that's a good money experience. But yes, I think we have until the Yank Track runs until January 29th. And yeah, I think we have until sometime in February to spend the Yak coins. February 5th to spend the Yak coins.
It's not enough time to earn more coins from the next track, right?
No.
You can't save up coins and say, hey, next track, I'm not really attracted to anything this track in the
Let's
store.
Wait
I want to
see
save
what
them
we got.
For next time. Yeah.
And in many ways, this is just a way to go back and pick up things that you've missed. And I'm just scrolling through my outfits tab here, and everything except for these things is owed because apparently I have completed all the Yak tracks.
Well, and it's not all of them. I think it doesn't include the most recent couple of Yak tracks because
a lot of
stuff that I don't have isn't in there.
Okay.
And given I don't particularly care, or I would have done the Yak track. But, you know, I think the last couple are maybe not represented yet. That might be, you know, 6 months old to give people some time with the prestige for these or whatever it is.
And, I mean, failing this, you have a few coins left over. You're going to be spending out on lamps.
Because I wanted to bring that up too. Yeah. Just if you're not into the cosmetics or you don't care, or you just have a few left over.
It's not a great conversion rate.
It's not a good conversion rate. No, no, it's like two.
But it's the make sure you don't have any left over. It's the make sure we don't, you know, you don't have to math out. I want to get exactly 67 coins or whatever. It's the whatever number I end up with, I'll be able to spend them down appropriately. So that's fine.
I mean, I think the only thing I have an issue with is the coins disappearing, but I can see why they did that.
I agree. No, I mean, I can't see why they do that. I dislike it. If the store is going to be the same every time, why are you changing the currency?
Yeah, and it's once again to create that idea behind it that you're spending something and that it's going to, you know, disappear. So it's only for this track. It's creating that time limited, dare I say it, FOMO that people
but also the currency is primarily obtained when you've completed the track, so you already have the rewards.
True.
So the people who gain a ton of these are already going to be people who don't need to spend them because they didn't miss the cosmetics. They completed the last one too, probably. Like,
right. So to get
that's where I'm at on this. Yeah. I don't love the way it's balanced.
No.
And it is better than the sack though.
Because the sack is randomness, right? And with this, you get to choose.
I didn't like that at all.
That's true.
So it feels like we got some good things and we got some bad things here with this.
It's a step in the right direction is how I feel about it. I like the choice instead of gamble.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we're going to see – this is the first iteration of it, and we're going to see where it goes after this based on how much interaction there is and how many people go and complete the repeatable task 51.
Compared to the earliest Yak tracks, Yak track has improved immensely, and it seems like they're doing something to improve it every track or two. They're making some change to how it functions, to add functionality to make it better for the players, to make it more interesting, engaging, less of a grind, whatever you want to call it. They are improving it consistently, and I think that will continue to happen. So we'll see where it goes with this.
Yeah, and Tanis, you've become our resident microtransactions person. So I'm going to say, is this predatory at all?
No, I mean, I feel the same as you guys. Like, I wish there was rollover coins, but I don't feel like this is predatory. Nothing on here. It's
right because it's all gameplay.
Yeah, and
you're not going to miss out by doing this. I mean, they're cosmetics.
And the ones that I like the best are the animations and the you know, the hurricane stuff, like, or not hurricane, quake. Mm-hmm. Those, to me, those are the ones that are really appealing. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'm probably going to have to save for the cape just in case it's worth money.
Yeah,
but
and of course
that would be
five task 51s plus completing the track.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that'll happen. I mean, like you say, we play more than 3 hours a day because of who we are as people. So, and we are completing some of the actual tasks instead of.
So it's going to go quicker than that.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, and I'll say this again, and I'll open this up to the comments or anybody out there listening, if there's an angle on this we've missed, let us know, because we want to provide the feedback on this, because I feel like this is an important iteration of Yak Track, one of the biggest iterations of Yak Track we've seen, and it's important that we, you know, get everything on the record that needs to be on the record. So if you guys feel we've missed something on this, please do let us know. And like I said, Tanis recently has a very close and intimate experience with keys and the treasure hunter economy, so I trust him to say if something here is predatory or not. So, but
no, and yeah, I'd like to get even closer, but you know, every card has a limit.
Oh, God. All right.
Oh, boy. And on that note, we have one more little thing to cover for the week.
A little bit of cryptic clues, out of the wilderness. And the alphabet on here looks familiar. It's the same alphabet we see on, you know, the lodestones.
It was in the Wordle.
That's in the Wordle. Okay.
Yep. There's literally an in-game translation guide in your POH bookcase for this writing.
Right.
Heads up, spoilers for the next 30 seconds. This translates to, there are two things certain in life, to which I imply death and taxes. So, what's our first update of the year? We've got a death rework.
And the GE tax rework
coming. That's it.
How does that sit for you, Tanis? What if you weren't aware of what was on the live stream and you learned through a cryptic clue that your Granite Exchange purchases were going to be taxed?
I mean, we kind of knew.
Well,
that.
I mean,
because you weren't for the GE tax when we first talked about it.
Yeah.
My sincere hope. There are three images left on here, and I have heard whisperings and been truly trying to avoid them because I think it's obnoxious that people have already seen what's behind these cryptic clue markers, or somebody has made fake ones, which, you know, good on them if they have. But I sincerely hope that these next three images do not include a teaser for what the next skill is. I expect an announcement video and a little more fanfare or some kind of thing, but I think cryptic clue is not the way to tease your next skill.
And I mean, if you were going to do it a cryptic clue, make it like a Zodiac killer message, right?
Yeah, you definitely want to make it difficult, but I mean, do we even know what the tax looks like? Because I mean, to me,
I think they said
the
2%.
Devil's in the detail.
Yeah,
see, so that explains why I wouldn't have liked it, because I would much prefer a progressive tax, not a flat tax that hits poor people. But, I'd much rather tax Daxi every time he gets a drop and it's, you know, 400 mil.
We are going to get hit.
Every time I sell a Fasoa.
Yeah, or all of the
zero of them.
Or in his case, the MASCAP codexes, right?
Those are only 50 mil. That's fine. Those wouldn't go too bad. It's not a four-bill drop. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be mad about it. That's on them to code it. It is what it is.
And then
if the goal is just to pull gold out of the economy to stop inflation, that's fine. You know, it gets the job done.
ESO does that.
ESO does that in a number of ways, not necessarily, but yes, true. So that's a flat 3.5% tax plus huge cost to have a place to sell things, but
and of course we can't have that in RS, but you know, based on this, I'd imagine over the Christmas break we'll be getting more on the death rework and the impending GE tax, because it looks like with this, what this means is that this is either going to be, you know, probably maybe the first update of the year,
decidedly Q1.
Yeah. Okay, let's just say yes, Q1.
I feel like
decidedly
the Q1. The tax update should be in April. That's when we do our taxes.
No. You keep your tax day brain out of here. Anywho. So that's coming. More things about that are released on the 10th, 11th, and I think 12th or 14th. Something. Next week, we're getting over the weekend and next week, we're getting the remainder of these images.
Oh, okay. So we'll get to talk about the rest of them next week.
Next week on the show, they should all be up.
Well, time to make sure we're seated firmly then.
Ding dong.
I mean,
if there is one, I hope it just says new skill. I don't want it to tell me what it is. That's all. Okay. Rant over.
Okay. All right. With that being said, let's move on to some achievements. of the week. I'll start us off with our Fresh Start Achievements Jingles. FSW1 got 99 ranged on December 8th. TTV Highcliff got 99 agility on the 7th. On the 6th, we have LeBron's Gains with 99 archaeology. Tanis, you got 99 divination on the 5th, as Battle/F also got 99 mining. Battle/ got 99 farming on the 4th. Then on the 3rd, we have RL Batora with 99 strength, TTV Highcliff with 99 farming on the 2nd, and Battlecliff with 99 prayer, or Battle/, rather.
For main game, starting on the 7th, we had Rob with 200 mil thieving XP. On the 6th, we had Even with 99 firemaking, and Terry Dax with 99 archaeology. On the 5th, we had State Bird with 99 invention. Also, Thieves with 200 million runecrafting XP, and Worst Tasker with 99 firemaking. Good jobs.
Very nice. Third time I see that Terry Dax name, Shane, I think. Is that a play on Dax?
Maybe.
I just got LeBron's Games like as a LeBron James reference, and I'm good job. You've done good work here. Thank you.
All right, well, moving then to December 4th, we have Dat Engineer with 200 mining and 200 mil agility. Nicely done.
What a pair.
Yeah, right? And then we have
Silverhawks at their work. Yeah, Silverhawks at work. It's got to be. Good on them.
Then we have Skromos Deputy with 99 summoning. Also on the 4th, we have Ling01 with 200 mil attack. On the 3rd, Skromos Deputy with 99 ranged on the 3rd. We have Mr. M with 99 archaeology on the 2nd. And Alex43 with 120 thieving on December 1st. Look at those guys. Look at all these 200 mils. Boom.
Yeah, yeah. It's clear
good
that
job, everybody.
It's clear that that's an end game for RS now. You know, as much as we, I try to deny it. But anyways, more on that.
I'll allow 120s. 200 mils can get the heck out of here. I got farming at 180 is still my highest. Yeah. I'm working on my 200 or my 120s now, though. We're approaching halfway done.
Pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Super mainstream. I know we try to avoid mainstream things for this, but this is more of a public service announcement for those who have not played them and have just avoided the console, whatever it is. The new Pokemon version, Scarlet and Violet. People are welcome to disagree with me in the comments or the Patreon or the Discord anywhere about this. I have been playing Scarlet or Pokemon Scarlet about half an hour before bed every night, and I think it is fantastic. I am 5 gym badges in. There are 3 tracks. You've got your standard 8 gym badges, in addition to 2 others, for a total of 17 badges in an Elite 4 and some final storyline that I haven't spoiled myself on yet because I'm very pleased about it. But my Pokedex is, for the regional decks, a little over, I mean, it's closing in on 35% complete with just a quarter of the badges. So, like, and it is the open world Pokemon adventure that I, like, they have taken the classic Pokemon formula of trainers and gyms and being able to, like, kind of make your own adventure and find, there's, like, the Team Rocket equivalent and all of these things, and they have baked it into an open-world game in a way that feels very good to me. It doesn't, like, Pokemon Arceus was that open-world, but it was missing certain aspects of the battling. This brings all of that battling back in. There is, the system for the mount is good and doesn't feel all that janky. The game, the biggest problem I have with it is the graphics definitely look out of 2004 with love. Right. Like, the models are still good, but the actual environment is a little questionable.
Well, that's the Switch in general, right?
Given it's, yes, what it's got not a big with. Processing unit, for sure. It's no, you know, it's nothing big. It's supposed to be handheld. But it on like, my TV screen or my big computer monitor, it looks okay, but, the environment is GameCube. But in terms of the actual thing, if you have not played Pokemon in a number of years and you're looking for that nostalgia hit,
I would give
these a go. Yeah. Anybody. I think that they're a good entry into the series. They're not Pokemon, especially Sword and Shield, and, you know, same things for Sun, Moon, XY, were a little bit like, all right, we're going to hold your hand and give you a very easy game.
Oh,
this challenge is, like, I have had some wipes in these. I haven't done a huge amount of grinding, but even, you know, first four gyms, I'm still, like, I'm having to really use some knowledge and like, retry stuff. And I know the end game teams for this are competitive, and the four-person raid battles are, like, challenging to complete solo at the end of the game. Like, they have put challenge back into it. It's still a kid's game, but it's not hand-holdy like they were. Like, I think this is very much a return to form for the series, and so...
Yeah,
for anybody that hasn't seen it, here you go.
And that's always an interesting thing to me to watch with these is, you know, the first Pokemon game came out in the late 90s and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But the franchise and, in effect, the Nintendo game consoles have had to evolve along the way to keep that demographic with them throughout that while still also maintaining the ability for somebody who is still in, you know, that 8 to 12-year-old age bracket to be able to get into these games. And that's an interesting thing to accomplish. And in many ways, I wonder if the arc of Pokemon and the Nintendo game consoles is the arc that Jagex needs to follow with RuneScape, because everything you've said about this could apply to RS as well, and how you iterate and grow RS.
That's true.
And you know, that was the biggest thing that, you know, came to me from this. And, you know, I played a few of them back in the day. My first was Yellow, and I played Gold, Silver.
A return to form is overdue, so to speak.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, for RuneScape, and that's fair.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way of putting it, both with the pick of the week and the quest this week on that. But let's talk about what we've been up to. What have you been up to this week, Tanis?
Well, Divination, and then
obviously,
I've switched over to fishing, just hit 95, so we're going to try to knock that one out. And then after that, I'm either going to try to do cooking, or I might just pet hunt the rest of the time, do a little bit of everything every day, see if I can get as many pets as I possibly can. I did end up picking up Bubbles this week, so that puts me at, I think, it's either four pets and five capes, or vice versa.
Doing well.
Capes and five pets, but yeah.
All right, fair enough. As for me, on Fresh Start, that's been my RS existence this week. Obviously did the quest on main and a couple of herb runs there and there. I'm at 199.2 out of 200 mil farming XP, so it's going to happen at some point, folks. It's going to happen at
some
point. Yes, I know, but that's
good on you.
I wish I would have got it back sooner at this point, but in any case, on Fresh Start, I dabbled in Treasure Hunter last week as Tanis recommended with the key promo, and I got a substantial boost in archaeology, which I don't know that I should have done that, but at the end of the day, archaeology is one of the ones I want to finish before that, so I kind of said, yeah, you know, there's 250 keys here sitting here from the competitive period. I can't earn any more until I use them. Let's use these and see what happens with that. So I got a bunch of bonus XP and XP in archaeology, a little bit in farming, but not too much. I'm closing in on 119 farming, so that's one that will definitely be done. The 120 farming will be done by the time this is over. I need to start up the wood and fruit trees again now that I have another source of income in Pavasaurus Rex Roars. And, you know, one harvest of roars from one of these dinosaurs basically pays for one of the dinosaurs. I had to pay through the nose for them. 15 mil for one, 17 mil for another. Yeah, that's how much they were. But that'll be paid for in due time. But aside from that, just working on archaeology and woodcutting, hit 80 woodcutting a bit before the show started, and archaeology is at 79. So, and, you know, I'll say again on archaeology, last week it was the complaint that I'm, you know, missing out on qualifications and whatnot. And this week the complaint, another archaeology complaint, but this is more, you know, just a general skill complaint, is that I'm missing out on the things that make AFK archaeology possible, like the deep porters and the auto screener and whatnot. But I mean, hey, it's Fresh Start. That's kind of what we were expecting as we went in. So
a little bit more rough and tumble, actually. Do your own skilling.
Right.
None of these fancy doodads and whiz-whacks.
Right, exactly, exactly. And, you know, I'm at Stormguard working towards 81 right now. I think I chose Very Stormguard nice. Over Warforged just because of the spot where it was next to the box, but I think the Warforged one might actually be closer, but I got the flight boots and the wingsuit done, so I can at least get around Stormguard now. And I always go back between Everlight and Stormguard of which one I like the most visually, but... you know, you go to Stormguard and it's just, wow, that's an environment that hadn't been done before. But anyways, that's enough blabbering for me. What have you been up to, Taxi?
Oh, I mean, I'm continuing. I took some time off of my grind through to recomp, so I'm currently uncomped. Oh, no. So this week for me was I spent quite a while working my way through the quest. I dawdled through it over a couple of days. I've done a number of herb runs, a number of wilderness events. We're a little over halfway done with that requirement now. Still keeping the animals going, so I'm at least getting beans so I can rush through the seed farming whenever I feel like I want to do that. Because right. I'm really not an herb run person. It's not, just not something I enjoy.
Yeah.
But I'll get there. And then, you know, working on Yak Track the last couple of days. I've got a lot of, 14 skills left, I think, 14, 15, something around there, that need to get 120'd, because I do want that, and the average level for all of those is probably 108 to 110-ish.
Okay, so not horribly no. bad. You're almost well, halfway there.
110 is, you know, 40 million XP, but, yeah. You know, that's... It's I have got the methods, and I have a lot of bits and bobs banked, so... Well, you know, I've just enjoyed grinding through it. I've done spent a lot of time in the Menophos VIP area, fishing with bait and switch on for the cooking XP and woodcutting for the fire making XP, and just, you know, vibing. Spent a lot of time burning logs at the brazier when I need to do skill and kills because I'm right. still hunting for Bernie. I'm still those right. two to three pets away from Master of All. So that's
yeah, and that's works. One thing that's I think it. You were saying in pre-show that it's actually quicker Grinding. to do the fire making task with the adds relic power and woodcut them.
If you need to write for the Yak Track, I'm not sure if Bernie drops from always adds or superheat form. Because the fire-making pet is time-based, and technically that's a tickless action. So I don't know if that gives you the full 4 ticks worth of chance, or if it's just no chance to get Bernie. Bernie's already stupidly rare, and I can't imagine that helps. So I am still burning corrupted magic logs, because it is lovely and incredibly AFK as well. So, you know, that's all fine and dandy.
Alrighty, well, I think that pretty much sums up this episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week to talk about the remainder of the cryptic clues coming for 2023, and of course when Presents from the Sledge arrives, and we're going to try and work on something effectively summing up some of the Fresh Start competitive stuff if we can wrangle some of the people other than myself who were in that Halo race and did finish top 100, and just kind of maybe swap some stories on that. So that's a bit of a preview of what we're up for next week. And if you want to have that automatically delivered to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe, and we're on any number of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google, Amazon, Stitcher, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe. We're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where you post the nibbles, and some of the actual shows are also – and the actual shows there. What am I talking about? Not some of the actual shows. All the actual shows are there at youtube.com/RSBNB. And, of course, giving us a like and subscribe greatly helps the channel out if you enjoy our content. But with that, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSVMB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.